are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Thursday, everybody. The Timberwolves were back in action last night, and they picked up right where they left off, playing uninspired basketball en route to another loss, their eighth in a row. So we're going to spend most of today complaining, I guess, about the way that game turned out and trying to figure out exactly what is going wrong. We are going to talk studs and duds like we usually do, but need to get a little bit off my chest about how lackluster of a performance it is from a team that desperately did need to win, and really no excuse for it. So, I mean, despite a four-day layoff, the Wolves played just as badly as they have for the past three winless weeks. And that's right. If you're scoring at home, the Wolves haven't won a game in 3 weeks. They haven't won a home game in over a month. And sure, Karl-Anthony Towns was somewhat unexpectedly unavailable. He had a knee sprain. He was questionable coming into the game, but hadn't missed a game with that particular injury. It got hurt late in the game last Friday against the Clippers. But after a three-day layoff, it was fair to assume he was going to try and play in a game that the Wolves really did need to win. But apparently there might have been some risk for re-injury. He did not play. But here are the reasons that should not have mattered. No Towns shouldn't have mattered all. I mean, it obviously matters, but in terms of winning the game against a bad team, they still should have been able to win. And here's why. It was at home. Granted, the Wolves are now 3-10 at home, which is insane. But still, you can't tell me that the Wolves are actually a better road team. Is any team really a better road team than a home team, regardless of what the record says? I think the numbers would bear out that home court advantage does matter at least a little bit in the NBA. It should. They were playing a 6-win Pelicans team was on a 13-game losing streak that had just lost 24 hours prior in pretty heartbreaking fashion in overtime down in New Orleans to the Brooklyn Nets. That was a game that the Pelicans should have had a chance to win in regulation. The refs messed up, did not call a shot clock violation on the Nets. The Pelicans should have had the ball with 2.3 seconds left and a chance to win the game in regulation. Didn't happen, wasn't reviewed. They were up in arms. They ended up losing in overtime. So an emotional loss, a long night, overtime game, flight from New Orleans to Minneapolis. The Wolves have been sitting here at home. They've been home now for over a week, haven't played since Friday. The Wolves were only missing Karl-Anthony Towns and Jake Layman. No other injuries to report. And somehow, the Pelicans led this game almost wire to wire. And a huge part of the issue was effort. We're going to talk about the nuts and bolts and basically shooting percentages and the Wolves' struggles on offense that led to this defeat. But New Orleans simply played harder, which is just crazy. This Timberwolves team that was supposed to be one of their calling cards was they were just going to play hard all the time. And with a mix of veterans and young players and all the offseason camaraderie that went on and the early parts of the season, this team played hard and was having fun, and Ryan Saunders has the respect of his players and they all love him. So you wouldn't expect a stinker when this team, maybe this is a trap game if the Wolves have been playing well or something like that right before a long road trip, after a long layoff. We kind of gave them a little bit of a mulligan after the three-day Thanksgiving layoff and the loss to Memphis at a sleepy Target Center matinee Sunday game before a road trip. I get that one. There's no mulligan this time around. This is a game the Timberwolves need to win. And they come out flat against a team that's lost 13 in a row and shouldn't have anything to play for at all. And beyond frustrating. And to make matters worse, Robert Covington didn't start this game. If you're wondering why, as I and everybody else was during the game, turns out he didn't start for disciplinary reasons. Apparently he was late to some sort of team function. Ron Saunders and Covington acknowledged that after the game. Of course, he was still the first sub that entered the game just about 4 minutes in and did play 30 minutes off the bench. So it didn't matter from a basketball perspective, but to have the guy who's supposed to be the most important veteran leader on this team and in some ways the anti-Jeff Teague in somebody that's wanting to hang out with the younger players and is good friends with Towns and is setting this example and supposed to be someone that every contending team is going to want to trade for, to have him be in that situation. And we don't know the details. Saunders did say he thought it was an accidental sort of thing, I think was his quote. after the game. But, and it can happen to anybody. But to have that happen on top of an 8-game losing streak, a loss to one of the worst teams in the league, Towns injury, it's kind of an indictment on how things are going in general. And again, beyond frustrating, I think is the best way to put it. That's the phrase that keeps entering my mind to describe where things are at right now. This team still has, they're still only like less than two, they're either a game and a half or two games out of the playoffs in the West. The schedule actually gets quite a bit easier. Granted, they're going out onto a four-game West Coast road trip, but overall, the next 10 games, there's, if this team was playing normally, if they were playing decently well, slightly above 500 clip as they were for the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season, I would say they could go 7-3 on their next 10 games and be right back in things. 6-4 would feel fine. 5-5 would be great at this point. But these are a winnable next 10 games. If the Wolves can go 6-4 or 7-3 in these next 10, they can still be in things in the Western Conference playoff race. It just doesn't feel like that's likely at this point. And who knows with Towns' injury how soon he is going to try and come back. But the Wolves have a back-to-back on Friday and Saturday in Denver and Portland. And it doesn't get, I mean, Portland's not great this year. Denver's maybe been a little disappointing, but Denver's absolutely a playoff team. And Portland still has a shot and still has Damian Lillard, and they're still good. Playing at altitude in Denver and then flying to Portland to play the next night will not be easy. And I'd be surprised if Towns missed the game Wednesday. Is he really going to play in both of those games? Who knows? It's just not a good situation. The flat effort is the most disappointing thing. And the Wolves were never really in the game. I know the final margin was 8, but it never felt like they were going to win. They were down 7 at the end of the first quarter. They were down 13 at halftime. They traded 11-0 runs at the Pelicans, had tied the game in the second quarter. The Pelicans went on another run, ended up being up by 13 at the half. The Wolves were down 15 at the start of the fourth quarter. They lost every quarter until the fourth. And despite pulling within, I think, 8 a couple of different times, maybe a little closer than that, the Pelicans pushed it back up to double digits, and it was garbage time that got the Wolves within 8 at the final score. And also extremely disappointing, the Wolves were the first team all year that the Pelicans held under 100 points. And absolutely, that's more of an indictment on the Wolves' offense than it is the Pelicans' defense. And the Wolves didn't actually play awful defense in this game. It was more just a function of a completely dysfunctional offense. And we'll get more into that here in just a moment. So we are going to get into the nuts and bolts of why the Wolves lost this game and some of the ugly offense that was rolled out there by the Timberwolves. And then we'll talk studs and duds in this game as well. But first, I wanted to mention Spotify Wrapped once again. If you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us on Twitter at Locked On Live and our show Twitter account, which is at Locked On T-Wolves, and we will share and retweet. The Twitter accounts to screenshot and tag us in are at Locked On Live and at Locked On T-Wolves on Twitter. We'll share and retweet your posts. All right, the easiest way to describe what this game came down to, outside of effort, like if you're just looking at the box score, and this I could have told you this without even looking at the box score. The Pelicans outshot the Wolves in every single area. They outshot the Wolves at the free throw line, the three-point line, and really everything in between, but especially the paint area is what really matters. The Wolves missed just a cascade of easy shots at the rim. There were some primary culprits. Andrew Wiggins, Robert Covington, Jeff Teague were probably the three worst, which also maybe not so coincidentally are the three that the Wolves needed to count on the most. Sans Karl-Anthony Towns. Wiggins shot 9 of 23 in this game for his 27 points. He missed, there was a point blank shot in transition when the Wolves were making a push in the third quarter. Jordan Bell missed a mostly open dunk. There was a little bit of interference from the defender, but there certainly wasn't a foul. Bell misses the dunk. Wiggins gets the rebound. I even watched this replay on slow motion to try and figure out how Wiggins missed this shot. It wasn't just like he tried to lay it in off the glass and it rimmed out or something like that. He was standing right there, didn't dunk it, tried to do a finger roll, and the ball just veered off to the right and barely touched the rim. And he was literally point blank range. And I've never done this before. I couldn't figure out the physics of how he missed the shot. It must have slipped out of his hand. I watched it on slow-mo, couldn't figure it out. And just dunk the ball, I guess, is the easiest thing to say to that. But that wasn't the only shot that Wiggins missed at the rim. Robert Covington had a few rim out. He was 5 of 17 on the night. And sure, 3 of 11 from beyond the arc. That means he was 2 of 6 inside of it. And as we know, Covington doesn't shoot mid-range jumpers. So that means he was basically 2 of 5 at the rim without digging any deeper. We can deduce that. And a couple of those misses were pretty egregious. He did contribute in some other ways, and we'll get into studs and duds here in a moment. Teague was just bad. He had a bad night. He was 1 of 8 from the field, and he was another player. He's been the Wolves' third best player so far this year. He's had a few really high peaks and some low valleys, some terrible games and some great games. But overall, if you boil everything down, Teague's been the team's third best player after Towns and Wiggins consistently this year. And he did not show up to play in this game. He got the start. Jarrett Culver, I haven't mentioned, Jarrett Culver didn't play. He had flu-like symptoms. So Teague actually did start, and Napier primarily played backup point guard minutes, although the two did share the backcourt for 6 or 7 minutes overall in this game. But just the missed shots at the rim was the most frustrating thing about this game outside of the general lack of effort by the Wolves. Three-point shooting reared its ugly head yet again, 10 of 39 for the Wolves. Obviously, you take out the Wolves' best three-point shooter in Karl-Anthony Towns, and that's going to, you know, three-point shooting is going to take a hit, but that's 25%, 25.6%. The Pelicans are a good three-point shooting team, and that's like the one thing that they can do consistently on an offense with the likes of J.J. Redick and Brandon Ingram, who are both north of 40% from three. They were 14 of 33 in this game. So they made 4 more threes despite attempting 6 less. That's 42.4%. Redick somehow was only 2 of 4 from beyond the arc, but it certainly felt like his impact was greater. He did lead their team in plus-minus for whatever that's worth. Ingram is 3 of 9 from beyond the arc. Jrue Holiday, who's, of course, I talked about in our preview show yesterday, not worrying about him from beyond the arc because he's like 33%. He was 3 of 6 in this game from deep. Josh Hart is a good three-point shooter, is 3 of 4. So this team shot 42% compared to the Wolves' 25% from three-point range. Free throw shooting has been an issue all season. That's just kind of been bubbling underneath the surface. Towns has finally come around after a terrible start at the free throw line to the year. But this game, I mean, Covington was 2 of 3. Napier was 2 of 3. Teague was 2 of 3. Gorgie was 2 of 4. Those are all guys who are pretty good free throw shooters, and they all missed at least one free throw in this game. The Wolves were 17 of 27 from the line, 63%. Pelicans also made 17 free throws, but they only attempted 21, 81%. So it took the Wolves 6 more attempts at the line to get the same number of free throw makes. Wiggins was 7 of 9, which, you know, I think we can live with. Not great, but fine. That's just another area the Wolves left easy points on the floor, and it doesn't make any sense. Trevion Graham was 0 of 2 from the free throw line. So actually, everybody that attempted a free throw in this game for the Wolves, except for Vonleh, who was 1 for 1, missed a free throw. So as much as, I don't know, it's the whole, I guess, missing it at the rim and at the free throw line and beyond the arc is all contagious, because that's what happened in this game. You can look at the Wolves' general offense and talk about how stagnant it's been. I know it's been really popular on Wolves' Twitter, especially to blame the lack of offense on the absence of Jake Layman, who is a great's maybe a strong word, a very good cutter and a good shooter. I absolutely think that has something that definitely plays into it. There's a reason the Wolves wanted Layman on the team. He's the type of player who knows when to back cut, who knows when to pop out to the free throw line. And he is athletic and he's big wingspan. You know, he does all those things that you want in a wing player who's going to cut and be able to shoot as well. But he's one guy who, you know, is okay. He's a good player. He's not the sole reason. If this team can't figure out how to run offense without a rotational wing player, then I don't know what they're going to do. Obviously not having Towns is a much bigger deal, as the offense typically runs through Karl-Anthony Towns. And there wasn't much in the way of, you know, Gorgui Dieng's a decent passer, but he's not, when he gets the ball outside the arc, he's not standing there looking to find cutters in the paint necessarily. He's typically turning to swing the ball around the perimeter. And even if he wanted to pass the cutters, there weren't cutters. Andrew Wiggins was not cutting as he should have been. Robert Covington is content to stay on the three-point line. Cade Bates-Diop only played like 19 minutes and also wasn't as active as I think he needed to be in this game. So the offensive stagnation was basically set a screen, you know, somebody would roll and everybody else would stay outside the arc and then, you know, do it over and over again. Jeff Teague wouldn't take advantage of mismatches. They wouldn't get the ball to Gorgui Dieng when he had a mismatch. It was just really sloppy. And Towns is the crutch that makes this offense work when they are sloppy and, you know, work to at least the extent that they could be competitive and hang around in games. And this is a game that I 100% do think they would have won had Towns played. You look at the Wolves big men that did play, and we'll get into studs and duds shortly, but the Wolves big men actually played well statistically. They did okay on the glass. The Pelicans didn't get really anything from their big guys. Derek Favors only played 21 minutes, had 6 points on two shots, did have 11 rebounds. Sulu Okafor only played 13 minutes. Jackson Hayes only played 14 minutes. And those guys didn't do any damage. They combined to score 15 points and grabbed 21 rebounds, those three basically centers for the Pelicans. The Wolves got 13-8 out of Gorgui Dieng. They got 6 points in just 11 minutes out of Jordan Bell, and they got 7-3 out of Noah Vonleh in 13 minutes. So the Wolves' big men actually played well in this game. And I think if Towns plays, this is a game they still manage to win. And that's, again, goes back to if they knew Towns wasn't going to play, or they were reasonably sure he wasn't going to play, the coaching staff should have had a better plan. Or maybe they did and the players didn't execute it, but one of those two things needs to happen against a bad team in a game that the Wolves desperately needed to win. All right, next up, we are going to talk studs and duds and put a bow on this stinker of a game. There were no standout positive performances in this game for the Wolves. It's pretty easy to point out who didn't play well. I've already mentioned the issues at the rim from the likes of Jeff Teague and Andrew Wiggins especially. Let's start with a couple guys who did have decent games. I mentioned the Wolves' big men. Gorgui Dieng was good. He somehow only played 24 minutes in this game, and I get that Ryan Saunders really wanted to kind of split up the minutes at the four and give some different guys some opportunities. Jordan Bell had 11 minutes. Noah Vonleh had 13. Gorgui had 24. And I don't think they ever shared the court together. I believe that they all just played the center role by themselves, which made sense. The Pelicans were playing small, so the Wolves needed to play small. And all three of those guys played well, so it's hard to get too upset about Gorgui only playing 24 minutes. But he had the most positive impact of the three of them in his time. And, provides the most, I think, in terms of the different things he can do on the floor. He had 13 points and 8 rebounds in 24 minutes. Was 5 of 7 from the field, 1 of 3 beyond the arc. Was 2 of 4 from the free throw line, which is a little uncharacteristic. Had an assist, no turnovers, was a minus 5 on the game. He did have 5 fouls, so I guess that was part of the issue. But Gorgui played well overall. And I guess we could mention the other big men were okay. I don't know that I call them studs because they didn't really play enough. But Jordan Bell, 6 points on 3 of 4 shooting in 11 minutes, a rebound, an assist, a steal, and a block. Noah Vonleh was a plus 3 in his 13 minutes. He was one of only three Wolves players to have a positive plus minus, had 7 points, 3 rebounds, 3 of 5 shooting, made his only free throw in 13 minutes. So the Wolves big men, I guess generally we could say, performed as studs in this game. Andrew Wiggins was just okay. I don't know that I'd call him a dud. I would put him somewhere in the middle. He did have 27 points, took him 23 shots to get there, was 2 of 6 beyond the arc. He had 7 rebounds, which is great, 2 steals, but he had 0 assists and 4 turnovers in 42 minutes. He was the only Wolves player to play more than 34 minutes, and he somehow managed to have 0 assists. Part of that is the Wolves weren't making shots, so it's not entirely Wiggins' fault, but you got to stumble into an assist over 42 minutes. If you're the primary ball handler in the offense, if you're taking 23 shots, you're the guy who's driving to the basket time after time. You got to accidentally get an assist, dump the ball off to Gorgui for a dunk or something. Compared to 4 turnovers, not great. So I don't know. I put him somewhere in the middle because at least he had some effort in this game and he grabbed some rebounds and shot the ball okay from beyond the arc. So, you know, Wiggins is somewhere between a stud and a dud, and I feel okay about that. Same with Robert Covington. He ended up with 15.7 rebounds, plus 3 steals, 2 assists, and a block in 30 minutes, but he shot 5 of 17 from the floor, 3 of 11 from beyond the arc, 2 of 5 inside the arc. just an okay game from Covington. He got his shots up. I mean, 17 shots in 30 minutes is pretty incredible for a guy who doesn't handle the ball in the offense, but he needed to contribute more offensively if the Wolves were going to win this game. So again, he's kind of in no man's land there. In terms of bad games, we talked about Jeff Teague a little bit already. He had 5 points and 9 assists in 34 minutes, and he should have been this team's leader in this game. 1 of 8 from the floor. He was 1 of 2 from beyond the arc, 2 of 3 from the free throw line, 2 rebounds, 2 turnovers in this game. He was somehow the team's leader in plus minus, which is another example why single game plus minus can generally be pretty wonky. He was a +7 in 34 minutes, despite shooting 1 of 8 in this game. So Teague, being unable to create off the dribble is a huge issue. And Teague seems to have these games where he can't make a shot in the paint. He can't hit a floater. He can't make a layup. And as soon as he misses a couple, you know, it's just over and he's not going to make them. He just isn't. And then there were a couple games, the game in Oklahoma City stands out. There was another game since then that the Wolves lost. I can't remember who the opponent was, that Teague actually was on and he scored 30 plus points and he was, you know, everything he threw up at the rim was going to go in. But this was not that game. This was the former of the two and it was awful. It really contributed to this loss. Josh Okogie was also bad. Part of this was due to how the Wolves were operating their offense and giving him opportunities and not getting out into transition. He had 3 points on 1 of 7 shooting, 1 of 5 beyond the arc. He didn't have his make until the final couple minutes when the game was already decided. So he was scoreless when it mattered. 3 rebounds, 1 assist. For him to only have 3 rebounds in 26 minutes is bad. And again, Okogie, basically, if he could just make open jumpers at a decent clip, and he's been shooting better from the corners, but if he could make his open jumpers, play strong defense and get out in transition, that's great. And he was an okay defender in this game. He was actually the Wolves' best defender when he switched on to, when he was guarding Brandon Ingram, he did fairly well. So I have a hard time putting him in the dud column, but offensively it was a clunker for Okogie. And then, I guess the one other dud that I would mention would be Kata Bates Diop. He did get 19 minutes off the bench, but was 1 of 6. He had 3 points, 0 of 2 beyond the arc, 4 rebounds, no assists, 1 steal, was a minus 15 on the game. So expecting more out of Bates Diop. I think a lot of what he does is kind of supported by what Towns does, distributing the basketball. Bates Diop is a good cutter. He's a good spot-up shooter, or is becoming that, I think. He wasn't last year, but has been great from the corners this year, and didn't get as many opportunities in this game, at least open opportunities, because of no Towns. So not a great game from him. Napier did have 10 points and 6 assists in 21 minutes, but he was 0-5 beyond the arc, team worst minus 19, and bad on defense. So a mixed bag from Napier, to be sure. I should also shout out Trevion Graham as having his best game in quite some time. He started because of the Covington disciplinary action, had 10 points, 6 rebounds, shot 4 of 8, missed his first 2 3-pointers, and then made his last 2. So he was 2 of 4 beyond the arc, did miss a couple free throws. But overall, I mean, if Trevion Graham can give you 20 solid minutes and give you 10 and 6, 2 of 4 beyond the arc, the Wolves will take that every single time. I'm not convinced they're going to get that very often. They haven't to this point. But... you know, they'll take that from Trevion Graham. So I guess to put a bow on this game, effort was terrible. The shooting was bad. No Towns, continues to be no Layman. Team now goes on a road trip. Friday in Denver, they're likely going to lose that game, quite frankly. Saturday in Portland is going to be real tough on a back-to-back. If I'm the Wolves, I seriously consider resting Towns Friday, trying to bring him back Saturday and salvage a win in Portland. Portland's not a great team. They've been struggling lately. It's a team the Wolves should be battling with for the, you know, 7 and 8 seeds in the Western Conference, and they, you know, they got to win some games. And then the road trip gets a little bit easier after that, I guess you could say, as after the game at Portland on Saturday, the Wolves will then go to Golden State on Monday and Sacramento next Thursday, both winnable games before coming home for Cleveland and Brooklyn, which are also winnable games. So winning at Portland could really start a snowball in a good way, as it would be an impressive win. So we'll see what the Wolves end up deciding to do. We'll be back on Friday morning with a preview for Friday night's game in Denver. And hopefully we'll all feel a little bit better after, you know, taking 24 hours to not think about this game anymore, and start looking ahead to this road trip. That's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.